lives, Nath had understood, better than anyone, the lexicon of their family, the things they could never truly explain to outsiders. That a book or a dress meant more than something to read or something to wear. That attention came with expectations. That, like snow, drifted and settled and crushed you with their weight. All the words were right. But in this new Nath's voice, they sounded trivial and brittle and hollow. The way anyone else might have heard them. Already her brother had become a stranger.
"I gotta go," he said.
"Wait. Wait, Nath. Listen."
"God, I don't have time for this." In a flash of bitterness, he added, "Why don't you go take your problems to Jack?"
He did not know then how those words would haunt him. After he slammed the receiver back onto the cradle, a twinge of guilt, like a small, sharp bubble, bored its way through his chest. But from far away, with the heat and noise of the party cocooning him, his perspective had shifted. Everything that loomed so large close up, school, their parents, their lives, all you had to do was step away, and they shrank to nothing. You could stop taking their phone calls, tear up their letters, pretend they'd never existed. Start over as a new person with a new life. Just a problem of geography, he thought, with the confidence of someone who had never yet tried to free himself of family. Soon enough, Lydia, too, would head off to school. Soon enough, she, too, would cut herself free. He gulped down the rest of his beer and went to get another. At home, alone on the landing, Lydia cradled the handset in her hands for a long time after the click. The tears that had choked off her voice dried away. A slow, burning anger at Nath began to smolder inside her, his parting words ringing in her ears. "I don't have time for this." He had turned into a different person, a person who didn't care that she needed him, a person who said things to hurt her. She felt herself becoming a different person, too, a person who would slap her sister, who would hurt Nath as much as he had hurt her.
"Go take your problems to Jack."
Monday morning, she put on her prettiest dress, the halter neck with the tiny red flowers, which her father had bought her in the fall.
"Something new for the new school year," he had said.
They had been shopping for school supplies, and he had spotted it on a mannequin in the store's window display. James liked to buy Lydia dresses off the mannequin. He was sure it meant everyone was wearing them.
"The latest thing, right? Every girl needs a dress for a special occasion."
Lydia, who aimed for unobtrusive, a hooded sweater and corduroys, a plain blouse and bell-bottoms, knew it was a date dress, and she did not date. She had kept it in the back of her closet for months. But today, she pulled it from the hanger. She parted her hair carefully right down the center and clipped one side back with a red barrette. With the tip of her lipstick, she traced the curves of her mouth.
"Don't you look nice?" James said at breakfast. "Just as pretty as Susan Day."
Lydia smiled and said nothing. Not when Marilyn said, "Lydia, don't be too late after school. Nath will be home for dinner." Not when James touched one finger to her dimple, that old joke again, and said,
"All the boys will be after you now."
Across the table, Hannah studied her sister's dress and lipsticked smile, rubbing one finger against the rusty scab, fine as a spider web, that ringed her neck. "Don't," she wanted to say, though she didn't know, don't what. She knew only that something was about to happen, and that nothing she could say or do would prevent it. When Lydia had gone, she seized her spoon and mashed the soggy cereal in her bowl to a pulp. Hannah was right. That afternoon, at Lydia's suggestion, Jack drove up to the point, overlooking the town, and they parked in the shade. On a Friday night, half a dozen cars would cluster there, windows slowly fogging,
until a police car scattered them away. Now, in the bright light of a Monday afternoon, there was no one else around.
So when's Nath getting back?
Tonight, I think. In fact, Lydia knew Nath would land at Hopkins Airport in Cleveland at 5:19. He and their father would be home at 6:30. She peeked through the window to where First Federal's clock rose, just visible in the center of town. 4:05.
Must be weird not having him around.
Lydia laughed a small, bitter laugh. 4 days wasn't long enough for him, I bet. He can't wait to leave for good.
It's not like you'll never see him again. I mean, he'll come back at Christmas and summers, right?
Jack raised an eyebrow. Maybe. Or maybe he'll stay out there forever. Who cares? Lydia swallowed, steadying her voice. I've got my own life. Through the rolled-down window, the new leaves of the maples rustled. A single helicopter, left over from fall, broke free and spiraled to the ground. Every cell in her body was trembling. But when she looked down at her hands, they lay calm and quiet in her lap. She opened the glove compartment and fished out the box of condoms. There were still two inside, just as there had been months ago. Jack looked startled.
What are you doing?
It's okay. Don't worry. I won't regret anything. He was so close she could smell the sweet saltiness of his skin. You know, you're not like people think, she said, touching one hand to his thigh. Everybody thinks, with all those girls, you don't care about anything. But that's not true. That's not really who you are, is it? Her eyes met his, blue on blue. I know you. While Jack stared, Lydia took a deep breath, as if she were diving underwater, and kissed him. She had never kissed anyone before, and it was, though she didn't know it, a sweet kiss. A chaste kiss, a little girl kiss. Beneath her lips, his were warm and dry and still. Beneath the smoke, Jack smelled as if he had just been out in the woods, leafy and green. He smelled the way velvet felt, something you wanted to run your hands over and then press to your face. In that moment, Lydia's mind fast-forwarded, the way movies did. Past them, clambering into the back seat, tumbling over one another, their hands too slow for their desires. Past untying the knot at the nape of her neck. Past the peeling away of clothing. Past Jack's body hovering over hers. All the things she had never experienced, and in truth could barely imagine. By the time Nath came home, she thought, she would be transformed. That evening, when Nath told her everything new that he had seen at Harvard, everything about the new and fabulous life he was already beginning, she would have something new to tell him, too. And then, very gently, Jack pulled away. You're sweet, he said. He gazed down at her. But even Lydia understood this instinctively, not like a lover. Tenderly, the way adults look at children who have fallen and hurt themselves. Inside, she shriveled. She looked down at her lap, letting her hair screen her burning face, and a bitter taste bloomed in her mouth. Don't tell me you've grown morals all of a sudden, she said sharply. Or am I just not good enough for you?
Lydia,
Jack sighed, his voice flannel soft.
It's not you.
Then what? A long pause. So long she thought Jack had forgotten to answer. When he spoke at last, he turned toward the window,
as if what he really meant were outside, beyond the maple trees, beyond the lake and everything beneath them.
Nath.
Nath! Lydia rolled her eyes.
Don't be afraid of Nath. Nath doesn't matter.
He matters,
Jack said, still looking out the window.
He matters to me.
It took Lydia a minute to process this, and she stared as if Jack's face had changed shape or his hair had changed color. Jack rubbed his thumb against the base of his ring finger, and she knew that he was telling the truth. But this had been the truth for a long, long time. But Lydia paused.
Nath.
You're always, I mean, everyone knows.
Without meaning to, she glanced at the back seat, at the faded Navajo blanket crumpled there. Jack smiled a wry smile.
How did you put it? Everybody thinks, with all those girls, that that's not who you are.
He glanced at her sideways. Through the open window, a breeze ruffled his sandy curls.
No one would ever suspect.
Snatches of conversation floated back to Lydia now, in a different tone.
Where's your brother? What's Nath going to say? And are you going to tell your brother we've been hanging out, and I'm not such a bad guy?
What had she said? He'd never believe me. The half-empty box of condoms gaped up at her, and she crushed it in her fist. I know you, she heard herself say again and cringed. How could I have been so stupid, she thought. To have gotten him so wrong. To have gotten everything so wrong. I gotta go. Lydia snatched her book bag from the floor of the car.
I'm sorry.
Sorry? For what? There's nothing to be sorry about.
Lydia slung the bag over her shoulder.
Actually, I'm sorry for you. In love with someone who hates you.
She glared at Jack, one sharp wince as if she'd splashed water in his eyes. Then Jack's face grew wary and pinched and closed, like it was with other people, like it had been the first day they'd met. He grinned, but it looked more like a grimace.
At least I don't let other people tell me what I want, he said,
and she flinched at the contempt in his voice. She had not heard it in so many months.
At least I know who I am, what I want.
His eyes narrowed.
What about you, Miss Lee? What do you want?
Of course I know what I want, she thought.
But when she opened her mouth, she found it empty. In her mind, words ricocheted like glass marbles. Doctor, popular, happy, and scattered into silence.
Jack snorted. At least I don't let other people tell me what to do all the time. At least I'm not afraid.
Lydia swallowed. Under his eyes, her skin felt flayed away. She wanted to hit Jack, but that would not be painful enough. And then she knew what would hurt him most. I bet Nath would love to hear all about this, she said. I bet everyone at school would. Don't you think so? Before her eyes, Jack deflated like a pricked balloon.
Look, Lydia, he began,
but she had already shoved the car door open and slammed it behind her. With each step, her book bag thumped against her back, but she kept running, all the way down to the main road and toward home, not stopping even when a stitch knotted her side. At the sound of every car, she wheeled around, expecting to see Jack, but the VW was nowhere in sight. She wondered if he was still parked up there on the point, that haunted look still in his eyes. When she passed the lake and reached her own street, slowing to catch her breath at last, everything looked unfamiliar, strangely sharp, all the colors too bright, like an overtuned TV set. Green lawns were a little too blue,
Mrs. Allen's white gables a little too dazzling, the skin of her own arms a little too yellow. Everything felt just a bit distorted, and Lydia squinted, trying to squash it back into familiar shape. When she reached her own house, it took her a moment to realize that the woman sweeping the porch was her mother. Marilyn, spotting her daughter, held out her arms for a kiss. Only then did Lydia discover the box of condoms still clutched in her hand, and she shoved it into her book bag, inside the lining.
"You feel warm," Marilyn said.
She picked up the broom again.
"I'm almost finished. Then we can start reviewing for your exams."
Tiny green buds, fallen from the trees, crushed themselves beneath the bristles. For a moment, Lydia's voice froze. And when it finally emerged, it was so jagged, neither she nor her mother recognized it.
"I told you," she snapped. "I don't need your help."
By tomorrow, Marilyn would forget this moment. Lydia's shout, the shattered edges in her tone. It would disappear forever from her memory of Lydia. The way memories of a lost loved one always smooth and simplify themselves, shedding complexities like scales. For now, startled by her daughter's unusual tone, she attributed it to fatigue, to the late afternoon.
"Not much time left,"
she called as Lydia pulled the front door open. "You know, it's already May." Later, when they look back on this last evening, the family will remember almost nothing. So many things will be pared away by the sadness to come. Nath, flushed with excitement, chattered through dinner, but none of them, including him, will remember this unusual volubility or a single word he said. They will not remember the early evening sunlight splashing across the tablecloth like melted butter, or Marilyn saying, "The lilacs are starting to bloom." They will not remember James smiling at the mention of Charlie's kitchen, thinking of long-ago lunches with Marilyn, or Hannah asking, "Do they have the same stars in Boston?" And Nath answering, "Yes, of course they do." All of that will be gone by morning. Instead, they will dissect this last evening for years to come. What had they missed that they should have seen? What small gesture, forgotten, might have changed everything? They will pick it down to the bones, wondering how this had all gone so wrong. And they will never be sure. As for Lydia, all evening she asked herself the same question. She did not notice her father's nostalgia or her brother's illuminated face. All through dinner and after dinner, after she had said goodnight, that one question churned through her mind. How had this all gone so wrong? Alone, record player humming in the lamplight, she dug back through her memory. Before Jack's face that afternoon, defiant and tender and hunted all at once. Before Jack. Before the failed physics test, before biology, before the ribbons and books and the real stethoscope. Where had things gone askew? As her clock flipped from 1:59 to 2 o'clock with a gentle click, it came to her, falling into place with the same tiny sound. The record had long since spun to a halt, and the darkness outside made the silence deeper, like the muffled hush of a library. She knew at last where everything had gone wrong, and she knew where she had to go. The wood of the dock was just as smooth as she remembered it. Lydia sat down at the end, as she had so long ago, feet dangling over the edge, where the rowboat knocked softly against the pier. All this time she had never dared come so close again. Tonight, in the dark, she felt no fear. and she noted this with a calm sense of wonder. Jack was right. She had been afraid so long she had forgotten what it was like not to be. Afraid that one day her mother would disappear again, that her father would crumble, that their whole family would collapse once more. Ever since that summer without her mother, their family had felt precarious, as if they were teetering on a cliff. Before that, she hadn't realized how fragile happiness was, how, if you were careless, you could knock it over and shatter it. Anything her mother wanted, she had promised, as long as she would stay. She had been so afraid. So every time her mother said, "Do you want?" she had said yes. She knew what her parents had longed for, without them saying a word, and she had wanted them happy. She had kept her promise, and her mother had stayed. "Read this book. Yes. Want this. Love this. Yes." Once, at the college museum, while Nath had pouted about missing the star show, she had spotted a nugget of amber with a fly trapped inside. "That's 4 million years old," Marilyn whispered, wrapping her arms around her daughter from behind. Lydia had stared until Nath at last had dragged them both away. Now she thought of the fly landing daintily in the pool of resin. Perhaps it had mistaken it for honey. Perhaps it hadn't seen the puddle at all. By the time it had realized its mistake, it was too late. It had flailed, and then it had sunk, and then it had drowned. Ever since that summer, she had been so afraid of losing her mother, of losing her father, and after a while, the biggest fear of all, of losing Nath, the only one who understood the strange and brittle balance in their family, who knew all that had happened, who had always kept her afloat. That long-ago day, sitting in this very spot on the dock, she had already begun to feel it. How hard it would be to inherit their parents' dreams. How suffocating to be so loved. She had felt Nath's hands on her shoulders and been almost grateful to fall forward, to let herself sink. Then, when her head had plunged beneath the surface, the water was like a slap. She had tried to scream, and coldness slid down her throat, choking her. She'd stretched out her toes looking for ground, and there wasn't any. Nothing when she reached out her arms. Only wetness and cold. Then, warmth. Nath's fingers, Nath's hand, Nath's arm, Nath pulling her back up and her head coming up out of the lake, water dripping out of her hair into her eyes and her eyes stinging. "Kick," Nath had told her. His hands held her up, surprising her with their strength, their sureness, and she had felt warm all over. His fingers caught hers, and right then she had stopped being afraid. "Kick your legs. I've got you. Kick!" It had been the same ever since. "Don't let me sink," she had thought as she reached for his hand, and he had promised not to when he took it. This moment, Lydia thought. This is where it all went wrong. It was not too late. There, on the dock, Lydia made a new set of promises, this time to herself. She will begin again. She will tell her mother enough. She will take down the posters and put away the books. If she fails physics, if she never becomes a doctor, it will be all right. She will tell her mother that. And she will tell her mother, too, it's not too late. For anything. She will give her father back his necklace and his book. She will stop holding the silent phone to her ear. She will stop pretending to be someone she is not. From now on, she will do what she wants. Feet planted firmly on nothing. Lydia, so long enthralled by the dreams of others,
could not yet imagine what that might be. But suddenly the universe glittered with possibilities. She will change everything. She will tell Jack she's sorry, that she'll never tell his secret. If he can be brave, so sure of who he is and what he wants, perhaps she can too. She'll tell him that she understands. And Nath. She will tell him that it's all right for him to leave, that she will be fine, that he's not responsible for her anymore, that he doesn't need to worry. And then she will let him go. And as she made this last promise, Lydia understood what to do, how to start everything over again, from the beginning, so she would never again be afraid to be alone. What she must do to seal her promises, to make them real. Gently, she lowered herself into the rowboat and loosed the rope. As she pushed away from the dock, she expected a surge of panic. It didn't come. Even once she had rowed, stroke by clumsy stroke, out onto the lake, far enough that the lamppost was just a dot, too small to contaminate the darkness around her, she felt strangely calm and confident. Above her, the moon was coin-round, sharp and perfect. Beneath her, the boat rocked so gently that she could hardly feel its motion. Looking up at the sky, she felt as if she were floating in space, completely untethered. She could not believe that anything was impossible. In the distance, the light from the dock shone like a star. If she squinted, she could just make out the dim shape of the dock itself, the pale line of boards against the darker night. When she got a little closer, she thought, she would be able to see it perfectly. The boards worn smooth by generations of bare feet. The posts that held them up just above the surface of the water. Carefully, she got to her feet, spreading her arms as the boat swayed. It was not so far. She could do this. She was certain. All she had to do was kick. She would kick her way to the dock and reach up to the planks and pull herself up out of the water. Tomorrow morning she would ask Nath about Harvard, what it was like there. She would ask him about the people he met, the classes he would take. She would tell him he'd have a wonderful time. She looked down at the lake, which in the dark looked like nothing, just blackness, a great void spreading beneath her. "It will be all right," she told herself, and she stepped out of the boat into the water. 12. All the way home, James thinks to himself, "It is not too late. It is not too late." With each mile marker, he repeats it until he is back in Middlewood, the college, and then the lake whipping by. When at last he pulls into their driveway, the garage door is open, and Marilyn's car nowhere in sight. Each breath sways him, no matter how hard he tries to keep upright. All these years, he has remembered only, "She ran away." He has taken this for granted. She came back. And she stayed. As he reaches for the front doorknob, his legs wobble. "It is not too late," he assures himself. But inside, he quavers. He cannot blame her if she has gone away again, this time for good. In the front hall, a heavy silence greets him, like that of a funeral. Then he steps into the living room and sees a small figure huddled on the floor. Hannah, curled in a ball, hugging herself with both arms, eyes a watery red. He remembers suddenly a long-ago afternoon, two motherless children on a cold doorstep. "Hannah," he whispers,
even as he feels himself collapsing, like an old building grown too weak to stand. His bag drops from his fingers to the floor. It's as if he's breathing through a straw.
Where's your mother?
Anna looks up. Upstairs? Sleeping? Then, and this is what gives James his breath again, I told her you would come home. Not smugly, not triumphantly, just a fact, round and simple as a bead. James sinks to the carpet beside his small daughter, silenced by gratitude, and Hannah considers whether to say more. For there is more, much more. How she and her mother had curled up together on Lydia's bed and cried all afternoon, holding each other so close that their tears mixed until her mother had fallen asleep. And how, half an hour ago, her brother had arrived home in a police car, rumpled and groggy and stinking to high heaven, but strangely serene, and had gone straight up to his room and into bed. Anna, peeking from behind the curtain, had seen Officer Fisk at the wheel. And late that night, Marilyn's car will quietly reappear in the driveway, washed, keys set neatly on the driver's seat. It can wait, she decides. She's used to keeping people's secrets, and there is something more pressing to tell her father. She tugs at his arm, pointing upward, and James is surprised by how small her hands are, and how strong. Look! At first, so overcome with relief, so accustomed to ignoring his youngest, he sees nothing. It is not too late, he thinks, glancing up at the ceiling, clean and bright as a new sheet of paper in the late afternoon sun. Not yet the end. Look! Hannah insists again, tipping his head with a peremptory hand. She has never dared to be so bossy. And James, startled, looks carefully and sees it at last. A white footprint against the off-white, as if someone has stepped in paint and then onto the ceiling, leaving one faint but perfect track. He has never noticed it before. Anna catches his eye, and the look on her face is serious and proud, as if she's discovered a new planet. It's ridiculous, really, a footprint on the ceiling. Unexplainable and pointless and magical. Anna giggles, and to James it sounds like the tinkling of a bell. A good sound. He laughs too, for the first time in weeks. And Hannah, suddenly bold, nestles close to her father. It feels familiar, the way she melts into him. It reminds him of something he's forgotten. You know what I'd do with your sister sometimes? He says slowly. When she was small, really small, even smaller than you. You know what I'd do? He lets Hannah climb onto his back. Then he stands and turns side to side, feeling her weight shift against him. Where's Lydia? He says. Where's Lydia? He'd say this over and over while she nestled her face in his hair and giggled. He could feel her hot little breath on his scalp, on the back of his ears. He'd wander the living room, peering behind furniture and around doorways. I can hear her, he'd say. I can see her foot. He'd squeeze her ankle, clutched tight in his hand. Where is she? Where's Lydia? Where could she be? He would twist his head and she'd duck, squealing, while he pretended not to notice her hair dangling over his shoulder. There she is! There's Lydia! He'd spin faster and faster, Lydia clinging tighter and tighter until he collapsed on the rug, letting her roll, laughing off his back. She never got tired of it. Found and lost and found again,
lost in plain sight, pressed to his back, her feet clasped in his hands. What made something precious? Losing it and finding it. All those times he'd pretended to lose her. He sinks down on the carpet, dizzy with loss. And he feels small arms curling round his neck, the warmth of a small body leaning against him.
Daddy,
Anna whispers,
will you do that again?
And he feels himself rising, pushing himself back up to his knees. There is so much more to do, so much yet to be mended. But for now, he thinks only of this, his daughter, here in his arms. He had forgotten what it was like to hold a child, to hold anyone like that. How their weight sank into you, how they clung instinctively, how they trusted you. It is a long time before he is ready to let her go. And when Marilyn wakes and comes downstairs, just as the light is fading, this is what she finds. Her husband cradling their youngest in a circle of lamplight, a tender look of calm on his face.
You're home,
Marilyn says. All of them know it is a question. I'm home, James says. And Hannah rises on tiptoes, edging toward the door. She can feel the room is poised on the edge. Of what, she's not sure. But she does not want to destroy this beautiful, sensitive balance. Accustomed to being overlooked, she sidles toward her mother, ready to slip by unnoticed. Then Marilyn touches a gentle hand to her shoulder, and Hannah's heels land on the floor with a surprised thump. It's all right, Marilyn says. Your father and I just need to talk. Then, and Hannah flushes with delight, she kisses her on the head, right where the hair parts, and says, we'll see you in the morning. Halfway up the steps, Hannah pauses. From downstairs, she hears only a low murmur of voices. But for once, she does not creep back down to listen. We'll see you in the morning, her mother had said, and she takes this as a promise. She tiptoes across the landing, past Nath's room where behind the closed door her brother lies in a dreamless sleep. The remnants of the whiskey slowly steaming from his pores. Past Lydia's room, which looks in the dark like nothing has changed, though nothing could be further from the truth. All the way up to her own room, where through the windows the lawn outside is just beginning to turn from inky blue to black. Her glow-in-the-dark clock reads just past 8, but it feels later. Like the middle of the night, the darkness quiet and thick as a down comforter. She wraps that feeling around her. From up here, she can't hear her parents talking, but it's enough to know that they're there. Downstairs, Marilyn lingers in the doorway, one hand on the jamb. James tries to swallow, but something hard and sharp lodges in his throat like a fishbone. Once he had been able to read his wife's mood even from her back. By the tilt of her shoulders, by the shifting of her weight from left foot to right, he would have known what she was thinking. But it's been a long time since he looked at her carefully. And now, even face to face, all he can see are the faint wrinkles at the corners of her eyes. The faint wrinkles where her blouse has been crushed, then straightened. I thought you'd gone, she says at last. When James's voice squeezes around the sharp thing in his throat, it comes out thin and scratched.
I thought you had.
And for the moment, This is everything they need to say. Some things they will never discuss. James will never talk to Louisa again, and he will be ashamed of this for as long as he lives. Later, slowly, they will piece together other things that have never been said. He will show her the coroner's report. She will press the cookbook into his hands. How long it will be before he speaks to his son without flint in his voice? How long it will be before Nath no longer flinches when his father speaks? For the rest of the summer, and for years after that, they will grope for the words that say what they mean. To Nath, to Hannah, to each other. There is so much they need to say. In this moment of silence, something touches James's hand, so light he can barely feel it. A moth, he thinks, the sleeve of his shirt. But when he looks down, he sees Marilyn's fingers curled over his. Merest curve as they squeeze. He has almost forgotten what it felt like to touch her, to be forgiven even just this much. He bows his head and rests it on the back of her hand, overwhelmed with gratitude at having one more day. In bed, they touch each other gently, as if it's the first time they've ever been together. His hand sliding carefully across the small of her back, her fingers careful and deliberate as she undoes the buttons of his shirt. Their bodies are older now. He can feel his shoulders sagging. He can see the silver scars from childbirth crisscrossing just below her waistline. In the dark, they are careful of each other, as if they know they are fragile, as if they know they can break. In the night, Marilyn wakes and feels her husband's warmth beside her, smells the sweet scent of him, like toast, mellowed and organic and bittersweet. How lovely it would be to stay curled here against him, to feel his chest rising and falling against her, as if it were her own breath. Right now, though, there is something else she must do. At the doorway to Lydia's room, she pauses with her hand on the knob and rests her head against the frame, remembering that last evening together. How a glint of light had caught Lydia's water glass and she'd looked at her daughter across the table and smiled, spinning out her daughter's future, brimming with confidence. She'd never imagined even for a second that it might not happen, that she might be wrong about anything. That evening, that sureness feels ancient now, like something grown small with the distance of years, something she'd experienced before her children, before marrying, while she was still a child herself. She understands. There is nowhere to go but on. Still, part of her longs to go back for one instant, not to change anything, not even to speak to Lydia, not to tell her anything at all, just to open the door and see her daughter there asleep one more time and know all was well. And when at last she opens the door, this is what she sees. The shape of her daughter there in the bed, one long lock of hair stretched across the pillow. If she looks hard, she can even see the rise and fall of the flowered comforter with each breath. She knows she's been granted a vision, and she tries not to blink, to absorb this moment, this last beautiful image of her daughter sleeping. Someday, when she's ready, she'll pull the curtains, gather the clothing from the bureau, stack the books from the floor and pack them away. She'll wash the sheets, open desk drawers, empty the pockets of Lydia's jeans. When she does, she'll find only fragments of her daughter's life. Coins, unsent postcards, pages torn from magazines. She'll pause over a peppermint, still twisted in cellophane, and wonder if it's significant, if it had meant something to Lydia, if it was just overlooked and discarded. She knows she'll find no answers. For now, she watches the figure in the bed. Her eyes fill with tears. It's enough. When Hannah comes downstairs, just as the sun is rising, she counts carefully. 2 cars in the driveway, 2 rings of keys on the hall table, 5 sets of shoes, 1 Lydia's, by the door. Though this last causes a sting just between the collarbones, these sums bring her comfort. Now, peeking through the front window, she sees the wolf's door open and Jack and his dog emerge. Things will never be the same again. She knows this. But the sight of Jack and his dog heading for the lake brings her comfort, too. As if the universe is slowly returning to normal. For Nath, though, at his window upstairs, the opposite is true. Awaking from his deep and drunken sleep, the whiskey purged from his body, everything seems new. The outlines of his furniture, the sunbeams slicing across the carpet, his hands before his face, even the pain in his stomach. He hasn't eaten since yesterday's breakfast, and that, like the whiskey, is long gone, feels bright and clean and sharp. And now, across the lawn, he spots what he's sought every day for so long. Jack. He does not bother to change his clothes or to grab his keys or to think at all. He simply pulls on his tennis shoes and barrels down the stairs. The universe has given him this chance, and he refuses to squander it. As he yanks open the front door, Hannah is merely a startled blur in the front hall. For her part, she does not even bother to put on shoes. Barefoot, she darts after him, the asphalt still cool and damp against her feet. "Nath!" she calls. "Nath, it's not his fault!" Nath doesn't stop. He's not running, just marching with a fierce and angry stride toward the corner where Jack has just disappeared. He looks like the cowboys in their father's movies, determined and tense-jawed and unshakable in the middle of the deserted street. "Nath!" Hannah grabs his arm, but he keeps walking, unmoved, and she scurries to keep up. They're at the corner now, and both of them see Jack at the same moment. Sitting on the dock, arms wrapped around his knees, the dog lying beside him. Nath pauses to let a car go by, and Hannah tugs his hand, hard. "Please," she says. "Please." The car passes, and Nath hesitates. But he's been waiting for answers so long. Now or never, he thinks, and he jerks himself free and crosses the street. If Jack hears them coming, he doesn't show it. He stays there, looking out over the water, until Nath is standing right over him. "Did you think I wouldn't see you?" Nath says. Jack doesn't reply. Slowly, he gets to his feet, facing Nath with his hands tucked in the back pockets of his jeans. As if Nath thinks he's not even worth fighting. "You can't hide forever." "I know it," Jack says. At his feet, the dog utters a low, moaning whine.
"Nath," Hannah whispers, "let's go home, please."
Nath ignores her. "I hope you were thinking about how sorry you are," he says.
"I am so sorry," Jack says, "about what happened to Lydia."
A faint tremor shakes his voice.
"About everything."
Jack's dog backs away, huddling against Hannah's legs. And she's sure now that Nath's hands will unclench, that he'll turn around and leave Jack alone and walk away. Except he doesn't. For a second, he seems confused. Then being confused makes him angrier.
Do you think that changes anything?
It doesn't. The knuckles of his fists have gone white.
Tell me the truth. Now. I want to know. What happened between you two? What made her go out on that lake that night?
Jack half shakes his head, as if he doesn't understand the question.
I thought Lydia told you.
His arm twitches, as if he's about to take Nath by the shoulder or the hand.
I should have told you myself, he says. I should have said, a long time ago.
Nath takes a half step closer. He is so close now, so close to understanding, that it makes him dizzy.
What?
He says, almost whispering, so quiet now that Hannah can hardly hear him.
That it's your fault?
In the second before Jack's head moves, she understands what's going to happen. Nath needs a target, somewhere to point his anger and guilt, or he'll crumble. Jack knows this. She can see it in his face, in the way he squares his shoulders, bracing himself. Nath leans closer, and for the first time in a long time, he looks Jack right in the eye, brown on blue, demanding, begging, "Tell me, please." And Jack nods his head, "Yes." Then his fist smashes into Jack, and Jack doubles over. Nath has never hit anyone before. And he'd thought it would feel good, powerful, his arm uncoiling like a piston. It doesn't. It feels like punching a piece of meat. Something dense and heavy. Something that does not resist. It makes him feel a little sick. And he'd expected a pow, like in the movies. But there's hardly any noise at all. Just a thump, like a heavy bag falling to the floor. A faint little gasp. And that makes him feel sick, too. Nath readies himself, waiting. But Jack doesn't hit back. He straightens up, slowly, one hand on his stomach, his eyes watching Nath. He doesn't even make a fist. And this makes Nath feel sickest of all. He had thought that when he found Jack, when his fist hit Jack's smug face, he'd feel better. That everything would change. That the hard glob of anger that has grown inside him would crumble like sand. But nothing happens. He can still feel it there, a lump of concrete inside, scraping him raw from the inside out. And Jack's face isn't smug either. He'd expected at least defensiveness, maybe fear. But in Jack's eyes, he sees nothing of that. Instead, Jack looks at him almost tenderly, as if he's sorry for him, as if he wants to reach out and put his arms around him.
"Come on!" Nath shouts. "Are you too ashamed to hit back?"
He grabs Jack by the shoulder and swings again, and Hannah looks away just before his fist meets Jack's face. This time, a trickle of red drips from Jack's nose. He doesn't wipe it away, just lets it drip, from nostril to lip to chin.
"Stop it!"
she screams. And only when she hears her own voice does she realize she's crying, that her cheeks and her neck and even the collar of her t-shirt are sticky with tears. Nath and Jack hear it, too. They both stare. Nath's fist still cocked. Jack's face and that tender look now turned on her.
"Stop!"
she screams again, stomach churning, and she rushes between them, trying to shield Jack, battering her brother with her palms, shoving him away. And Nath doesn't resist. He lets her push him, feels himself teetering, feet slipping on the worn smooth wood,
lets himself fall off the dock and into the water.
So this is what it's like,
he thinks as the water closes over his head. He doesn't fight it. He holds his breath, stills his arms and legs, keeps his eyes open as he plummets.
This is what it looks like.
He imagines Lydia sinking, the sunlight above the water growing dimmer as he sinks farther too. Soon he'll be at the bottom, legs and arms and the small of his back pressed to the sandy lake floor. He'll stay there until he can't hold his breath any longer, until the water rushes in to snuff out his mind like a candle. His eyes sting, but he forces them open. This is what it's like, he tells himself. Notice this. Notice everything. Remember it. But he's too familiar with the water. His body already knows what to do, the way it knows to duck at the corner of the staircase at home where the ceiling is low. His muscles stretch and flail. On its own, his body rights itself. His arms claw at the water. His legs kick until his head breaks the surface and he coughs out a mouthful of silt, breathes cool air into his lungs. It's too late. He's already learned how not to drown. He floats face up, eyes closed, letting the water hold his weary limbs. He can't know what it was like. Not the first time, not the last. He can guess. But he won't ever know, not really. What it was like, what she was thinking, everything she'd never told him. Whether she thought he'd failed her or whether she wanted him to let her go. This, more than anything, makes him feel that she is gone.
Nath?
Hannah calls. And then she's peering over the side of the dock, her face small and pale. Then another head appears, Jack's, and a hand stretches down toward him. He knows it's Jack's, and that when he gets there, he'll take it anyway. And after he takes it, what will happen? He'll struggle home, dripping wet, muddy, knuckles raw from Jack's teeth. Beside him, Jack will be bruised and swollen. The front of his shirt a Rorschach of dark brown. Hannah will obviously have been crying. It will show in the streaks under her eyes, in the damp thwack of lashes against her cheek. Despite this, they will be strangely aglow, all of them, as if they've been scoured. It will take a long time to sort things out. Today they will have to deal with their parents. Jack's mother, too. All the questions. Why were you fighting? What happened? It will take a long time, because they won't be able to explain, and parents, they know, need explanations. They will change into dry clothing, Jack wearing one of Nath's old t-shirts. They will dab mercurochrome on Jack's cheek, on Nath's knuckles, making them look bloodier, like their wounds are reopened, even though in reality they are beginning to close. And tomorrow, next month, next year, it will take a long time. Years from now, they will still be arranging the pieces they know, puzzling over her features, redrawing her outlines in their minds. Sure that they've got her right this time, positive in this moment that they understand her completely at last. They will think of her often. When Marilyn opens the curtains in Lydia's room, opens the closet and begins to take the clothing from the shelves. When their father one day enters a party and for the first time does not glance quickly at all the blonde heads in the room. When Hannah begins to stand a little straighter. When she begins to speak a bit clearer, when one day she flicks her hair behind her ear in a familiar gesture and wonders, for a moment, where she got it. And Nath,
When at school, people ask if he has siblings. Two sisters, but one died. When one day he looks at the small bump that will all